$1 trillion, the next stimulus package on Friday. Is that a basis for negotiation? Is the president prepared to sign another relief package?
So Nancy Pelosi basically lost me with that package when she has $1,200 checks for illegal immigrants. And it just goes downhill from there.
It does. This is Sarah Carter with The Sarah Carter Show. And I hope everyone out there in semi-lockdown America is doing well and that you're all healthy and safe. And hopefully, hopefully, very soon, our country will get back to normal. I don't want to say a new sense of normal because I don't like that. You know, it entails that we're giving all something up. I don't believe that. I don't believe that this virus is going to change us forever. I think that, of course, we're learning new things, we're learning new ways, but I do believe that we will be allowed to hug again, that we will be allowed to say hello again, that we will walk through a grocery store without a mask again, that we'll have life back again. But as far as our nation is concerned, it's about us working together as a country and helping lift each other up. What is this? Peter Navarro's right. What is this Heroes Act that's going to be providing $1,200 checks to illegals who are here in the United States illegally? A lot of this money, this allocation of money, is actually going to go to special interest groups or to nonprofits. And then they're supposedly going to dole out these checks to people who are here illegally. Look, I want, and I understand this issue because I covered illegal immigration or undocumented workers or whatever anybody wants to call them, or aliens, for a good portion of my career. I still do. I was in Guatemala last year twice. Jenny was with me on one of the trips. And we covered this issue of people coming to the United States illegally looking for a better life, fleeing their home nations, their countries, their homeland. And it's tough. And it's really tough. But it's really tough on the American people. We have friends, my husband and I right now, who have small businesses who have not been able to get a loan to keep their employees. They've had to lay them all off. They're still paying rent. They're still paying rent for their business, but they have no employees and they haven't been open. And this is really scary. It's a really scary time. And Americans need all the help they can get. We need it. Our children are at home. They're not in school. Months out of school where parents are trying to homeschool. Everything's just catawampus. You know, we're all trying to make ends meet. We're all trying to keep our businesses going. And we still don't know what's going to happen in the fall. We still don't know what's going on here with this virus. We don't have all the answers. We really don't. And I care about our country. And we really do, really, really need to keep America first here. We have to be there for each other. Our government has to be there for us. And Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker, needs to stop playing politics. She has to stop doing this. We have to find a way to work together. And I'm looking right now at this Heroes Act, right? It's like they snuck everything they could sneak into it. They're like, okay, you know what? America needs the money, so let's just sneak all this pork into this bill and put as much junk in it as possible. Create this roadblock, basically, so that either they give it to us or Americans don't get their money. I mean, how wrong is that? How wrong is that? I'm looking at this Heroes Act. It would provide nearly $1 trillion in emergency relief to struggling state and local governments that have seen their revenue sources dry up amid the coronavirus pandemic. Let me make this clear, too. Money is also going to states that had bad budgeting. I mean, they basically screwed up on their budgets. Their governors didn't know how to run a state. It's not all about coronavirus. It's not all about COVID-19. There are a lot of states out there whose governors mismanaged money. And why should this Heroes Act be the bailout for them? Why should it? I want to see the American people get this money right in their pockets, You want to stimulate the economy? Get it right to the American people and get it to the small businesses, because it's our small businesses that are paying the biggest price. I drove around in my community. I've been doing it since this lockdown. Get a chance, just drive around just to see what's going on. And I see businesses shutting down. People that are no longer going to be there. Gyms that have closed. You know, coffee shops. Mom and pop shops that are no longer open. And it's really tough. It's really tough to see that in our community. Over 36 million Americans without jobs. And Nancy Pelosi, she wants what? To dole out some of this money to special interest groups? You know, when I talked to GOP whip Steve Scalise last week, he called it the unicorn package, the unicorn special interest package. That's what he called it. And he's right. It's a unicorn special interest package. Let's listen to what Nancy Pelosi. Adam, can you play Nancy Pelosi's "Time is of the Essence" for us?
Time is very important. We have lost time. But again, setting aside how we got here, we cannot take a pause. They may think it's okay to pause, but people are hungry across America. Hunger doesn't take a pause. People are jobless across America. That doesn't take a pause. People don't know how they're going to pay their rent across the country. We have to address this with humanity.
We have to address this with humanity.
Can we play a game real quick?
She doesn't care.
Can we play a quick game? I want to play a drinking game with our friends here at the Sarah Carter Show. Oh, so what we're going to do
I would love that.
We're going to play a little...
Especially before Congressman Matt Gaetz comes on.
You guys need it.
It's just going to be explosive, right?
He's a blast.
Because this is going to be awesome.
And because he's explosive, what I'm going to do...
I'm drinking my tea.
All right, so you drink your tea. Everybody at home, drink whatever it is you want. Be careful. Obviously, don't drink liquor. But we're playing, obviously. But if we were to play a drinking game, I'm playing an explosion sound every single time that she says some sort of buzzword in this 21-second clip.
Time is very important. We have lost time. But again, setting aside how we got here, we cannot take a pause. They may think it's okay to pause, but people are hungry across America. Hunger doesn't take a pause. People are jobless across America. That doesn't take a pause. People don't know how they're going to pay their rent across the country. We have to address this with humanity.
Drink up, folks.
So true. So true. But we are going to take a pause for just one moment to think about what she is saying here. There's nothing that Nancy Pelosi says here because she cares about you. Nancy Pelosi is doing everything she can to gain as much traction as she can for the Democrats, because guess what? They are terrified. They have nothing come November. They've got Vice President Joe Biden, who's got a plethora of problems, by the way, just an enormous amount of problems on his plate as he comes into this election. And we've got President Trump, who is pounding, trying to get all the information out there for the American people, working 24/7. We have seen changes we have never seen. And I mean, the first 4 years of presidency, we've never seen these type of changes. I mean, and President Trump, I'm going to be talking to Congressman Matt Gaetz about this. It's really important. Focus on China. China is so important right now. It is truly the Chinese Communist Party is truly our enemy. And someone that we have to be very concerned about. All of us right now on lockdown, you can thank China for that, not President Trump. That's what Nancy Pelosi wants to push out there. She's hoping against hope. She's hoping to gaslight you, her and the Democrats, make you believe that this somehow is all the Trump administration's fault. Coronavirus, COVID, the economy. No, President Trump had an economy that was roaring and will be roaring again. This virus, this pandemic, this pathogen came from Wuhan, China. It came from Wuhan, China in airplanes, where the Chinese government did not put a lockdown on this virus. They allowed 5 million to 7 million people to leave Wuhan when they knew there was an outbreak. And now we're seeing so many different aspects of this virus that we hadn't seen before. Things that the Chinese government, Chinese Communist Party, was well aware of. we got to hold China accountable for this, the Chinese Communist Party. And I want to emphasize again, this is not about the Chinese people. The Chinese people, many of them, do everything they can to push back against the CCP. And it's been painful. Look at what is happening in Hong Kong. China is holding Hong Kong hostage. We have friends there. You know, Andy Chan, Jenny and I met Andy Chan. I consider him a great friend. He is being nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize this year. And he has stood up to the Chinese government. And he's an amazing human being. And he puts his life on the line doing this. And we see what's happening in Hong Kong. We see what's happening in other parts of the world where China's encroaching. And here we have Nancy Pelosi, you know, trying to blame President Trump for all of this. No, Nancy Pelosi, blame China. Blame China. They are the culprits of this. And stop dividing our nation. Stop dividing us. Because guess what? At some point, people, we have to stop fighting each other. Because the more we fight each other, the more our enemies win. That's how they operate. Right? Want to talk about Russia? Remember the whole thing about this whole conspiracy and that, you know, John Brennan said in his assessment in the, you know, intelligence assessment that, you know, the Russians wanted Donald Trump to win. And then the Russians, you know, want to do this and they want to do that. Look, the Russians didn't have to go that far. We are doing it to each other. Former senior Obama administration officials, I'm going to be talking about that too, as well with Congressman Matt Gaetz here on the show. You know, divided our nation, lied to you, leaked lies to mainstream media news outlets who didn't question them because they didn't like Donald Trump either. And they divided our country. We are in a point now, a pinnacle of history right now, where we have to start accepting responsibility for ourselves. We have to reach across the aisles, right? And we have to say, okay, enough is enough. And we have to hold our elected officials accountable and tell them, look, okay, enough's enough. Enough with tearing each other apart. Enough with our country being torn apart. We as Americans need to find a way to get through this together, to get our economy back on track, to find a way to connect with one another again, because we are all Americans. We are all Americans. It doesn't matter if we're Democrats or Republicans or independents or Green Party members, folks. It doesn't matter. We might not always agree. We might have different ways of doing things, but we are all Americans. We are all Americans. And our economy right now is in dire straits, and our nation is in dire straits. Unless we find a way to work together, to get through this together, and to make things happen. And of course, I always have the wonderful, wonderful, wonderful Matt Gaetz, Congressman Matt Gaetz. He's a member of the 116th Congress, and he is currently serving his second term. He is a member of the House Armed Services Committee and the Judiciary Committee. He's been on the front lines of this battle to get the truth out on the Russia hoax investigation. And he is, you know, eclectic and smart and young. And, you know, he's got this great new podcast, which I'm sure he's going to be bringing up over and over again while I talk to him. Hot Points with Matt Gaetz, and I'm going to download it. I'm going to listen to it. He's got the inside knowledge.
Hold on, he's going to hold you to this. He's going to hold you to this. I would never step in other than knowing that this guy. It's Hot Takes, not Hot Points. It's Hot Takes with Matt Gaetz.
Oh, did I say Hot Points?
Yeah, folks, this interview is fantastic. Matt. This guy's he's just great, and these two together, you're just going to enjoy this.
Oh yeah. So not Hot Points. It's Hot Takes with Matt Gaetz. Here he is. Congressman Gaetz, I am so grateful to have you on the Sarah Carter Show because I have been trying to get you on for months now, but you are one of the busiest men in Congress because I can never get you on the show. So thank you so much for being here today because there's a lot of breaking news and a lot of it deals with your district.
Well, thank you, Sarah. And frankly, the podcast we need to record is just having someone follow you and I in the Fox News green room. I feel like that is the that might not be the podcast America has yet, but that is the podcast America deserves, because I think we get like political commentary from the makeup artists and folks in the Fox News green room that is way better than other people are watching on CNN or MSNBC.
It's so true. I want all of you out there to understand, when Matt and I, Congressman Gaetz and I, are in the green room, and, you know, people shuffle in and out. We get Senator Graham and others that are coming in and out of the green room getting ready to, you know, give their, you know, 10 cents on whatever. The makeup artists are usually the best. They are there waiting. They're listening. They have always their point of view. And Matt always makes them laugh and makes me laugh. So Congressman Gaetz wins for, you know, being the most quick-witted in all of Congress and all on the Hill. But he's right. I think people would be way more interested, Congressman Gaetz, in what goes on behind the scenes than they are
totally.
Like...
And yeah, I'm not even talking about the politics, just the hair extension tips.
You are so right.
Look,
nobody can get their hair blow-dried every single night.
Right. Nobody can do that, right? I mean, you have to have fake hair to make it happen. But look,
you do.
Sarah, it does highlight like the reporting that you have been doing, the commentary I've been offering for years on the setup of this Russia probe. And, you know, I know we got to get to Pensacola, but, you know, it did feel at times like yourself, John Solomon, Mark Meadows, Jim Jordan, Ron DeSantis, and I were against not only the whole media establishment, not only the whole intelligence establishment, but a lot of the Republican establishment too. And I just think that now that the truth is finally coming out, it's an important time to have a reckoning about the fact that, you know, when Republicans had control and we were trying to run these leads to ground that you were reporting on, Paul Ryan would not allow us to issue a single subpoena. And that is a dereliction of duty of the Speaker of the House of Representatives during Republican
Congressman,
control.
Why do you think they did that? Congressman, why do you think they did that? Because most of the listeners don't really understand what was happening behind the scenes. We saw that with Paul Ryan. We saw issues with, with Congressman Trey Gowdy and others who just refused to do the job that they were supposed to do, especially during that time when all of us were being hit so hard. We were trying to get the information out there to the public. And, you know, having people on the Republican side work against Republicans and work against investigative journalists was really tough.
I don't believe that Paul Ryan would have viewed a dislodging of the Trump presidency as a particularly bad thing. You know, I think that a lot of times Paul Ryan was walking around this place saying, well, you know, if this thing all knocks out Trump and we get a President Pence, he's my buddy from Congress, and that'd be all the same to me. And it was about more than that to us. It wasn't even about President Trump. It was about our government and these institutions that are supposed to be serving the people and above reproach being so infected by politics during the Obama era that they may be lost forever to partisanship.
And we
were trying to restore that. And Paul Ryan was not an ally in that endeavor. He seemed to be sort of okay with it so long as the politics were in line with his at the time, which wasn't really Republican versus Democrat. It was this notion of the permanent established Washington versus this populist uprising that Trump had led, where people actually wanted to come here, you know, in the vein of Michael Flynn, and reorganize and reorient the intelligence community, reorganize our foreign policy away from obsession with Russia, a like declining power with a commoditized economy, and instead actually focus on the real threat of China. That was the geopolitical overlay at the time. And there, you know, look, there are a lot of these people who wanted the Cold War to just continue in perpetuity because it was good for Washington and not necessarily for America.
Well, good for Washington, good for pocketbooks, good for friends of theirs. And, you know, now Paul Ryan, what do you think's up with Paul Ryan? I mean, he walks away. And do you think there was some kind of plan of action for him in the future in politics? Or do you think he just walked away for good just because he knew he couldn't hang in Washington the way it was changing?
Yeah, what do you mean walked away? I mean, Paul Ryan liked to criticize me for going on television too much, and now he's been put on the board of directors for News Corp, which is the parent company to Fox News. So I guess I take that as a perhaps a tacit apology from the former speaker. But I think that, you know, he still is interested and engaged in politics, and that's good. I mean, I look, there were a lot of areas where Paul, I think, had good ideas when it came to entitlement reform and budgeting and budget process. You know, the guy wasn't all bad in that regard, but when it came to the call of the Trump moment to face down the people who were attacking the voters, he just wasn't on our side. And he was able to, you know, co-opt the likes of the chairman of the committees to not issue subpoenas. I mean, there's just no explaining to MAGA world why, when we had power, we didn't use it. And then when Democrats got power, they totally abused it. And, right. And it you know, it makes like the Ryan era look like we all had low T.
Right, right. And that was a big complaint. And that's a complaint that I hear from conservatives quite often, people that were frustrated with the Republican Party. A lot of reasons why independents and I would say just the overall conservative America, middle America, backed President Trump and continues to back President Trump is because he is so different. He is the populist president, right? He is so different from the establishment politics. But I want to play a clip right now from John Brennan. Adam, if you could play that really quickly, because it goes right to the Russia hoax and the whole issue of why didn't we subpoena some of these guys? Now we're lucky that we actually hear, we have their transcripts, right? That we can actually see these transcripts have been declassified by Rick Grenell, the acting director of national intelligence. But here is something that former CIA director John Brennan said on Friday, and I want to get your take on it.
I feel very good that my tenure at CIA and my time at the White House during the Obama administration was I was not engaged in any type of wrongdoing or activities that caused me to worry about what this investigation may uncover. So I welcome the opportunity to talk with the investigators. I have nothing to hide. I have not yet been interviewed by any of those individuals involved in this matter, but I am willing to do so because I do believe that for too long the American public have been misled by Donald Trump, by William Barr, and others.
Jeez. I mean, Sarah, you hear the guy's voice cracking. He starts right. These sentences with like no idea where they're ending. I mean, every mom who has ever questioned a teenager home after curfew knows that like that is the voice of a guilty person. I mean,
right.
And Brennan, like what was so devious about Brennan is that he would go out there on CNN and be like, you know, oh, Trump was colluding with Russia. This is, you know, absolutely the case. And then when he would have to raise his right hand and swear under oath, he would acknowledge the lack of empirical evidence regarding any collusion or criminal conspiracy. And, you know, when you just see this vast disparity in what Brennan was saying when he could be charged with a crime for lying and then what he was saying when he was collecting a paycheck from CNN, it leads to only one conclusion, and that is that CNN should apologize to their viewers. I mean, they really
absolutely
should. They should apologize for putting people on and paying them to say something that even the people speaking did not believe and could not validate when pressed in a congressional setting.
You know what, Congressman Gates? The New York Times should apologize. The Washington Post should apologize. Yahoo News. I guess Michael Isikoff did a semi-apology for some of his stories. Reuters. I mean, I can go on. McClatchy.
I mean, Isikoff was like a cog in the conspiracy.
Right. He was being utilized as a cog. It was interesting because I just, before we go to Pensacola, I'm just going to quickly, you know, David Ignatius has just published a book. And one of the characters is a guy by the name of Michael Dune in the book. It's called The Paladin or The Paladine. And he describes this character as somebody that is a former CIA officer who basically ends up in this mysterious, I would call it almost like what happened with Michael Flynn, where his name, he's discredited in the media. His life is destroyed and turned upside down. And remember, it was David Ignatius whose very first story on Lieutenant General Michael Flynn actually led, exposed that there was a leak, a highly classified leak, and actually led to this continuous investigation against Flynn. And I see all these journalists that have played a part in what we have called or deemed the Russia hoax, this huge disinformation campaign against the American people, and not just President Trump. And none of them have either retracted their stories, apologized for what they have done, or told the American people the truth. In fact, they continue to perpetuate a lot of the same lies. What do you think's happened here? Do you think it's just because they can't get around to facing what they did, or do you think they just don't care?
I think in a lot of ways, they've been let off the hook by coronavirus. I mean, if our nation weren't captivated with concern over economic condition and recovery and, you know, people's kids and their educational setting, I think that there would be a greater reckoning for the liars and the criminals. And perhaps when we're able to restore some sense of order, there will be an antiseptic look at what went on. And I think that the Durham indictments will go a long way to telling that story. But I mean, like,
do you have any guess on who's going to be indicted? Do you have any guesses on who's going to be indicted?
You know, I you got to believe that the people involved in the predication of the Russia investigation have got the most to be concerned about, and those who abused process. I mean, obviously, you got folks like Kleinsmith, who was changing evidence before the FISA court, who's got to be concerned. But that can't just be, you know, a fall guy. There's got to be, I think, a broader reckoning. And I think that's likely to come.
Well, let me go to Pensacola, because I don't want to, you know, I don't want to lose you before we get to what I think is so important. And you were right on the money. And this was regarding the shooting by the Saudi Air Force pilot when he opened fire and he killed three people at a Florida Navy base in December. Now there's evidence that he was actually an associate of Al-Qaeda, an affiliate in Yemen. And this was information they obtained off of the cell phones. You were right from the very beginning, Congressman. You were holding even Saudi Arabia accountable, saying, look, we bring them here to study. I have actually given speeches before at the Defense Intelligence Agency early on in my career to young officers from other parts of the world that would come here actually as an exchange program or to build those bonds and those relationships with our intelligence and military. But there was always that concern that there was infiltration, right? And from the very beginning, you said, wait a minute, we've got to hold people accountable. Whether we have to get more cooperation from the Saudi government, we have to find out what happened here. And from the very beginning, you were questioning this. And now it appears that you were right on the money. This Air Force, Saudi pilot was connected to Al-Qaeda. And it's months later. I mean, what's going through your mind when you think about this?
Yeah, folks can check out a pretty long breakdown I have today out on my podcast, Hot Takes with Matt Gaetz. Hot Takes with Matt Gaetz. It's a daily podcast, so I kind of go over the day's news. And today I break down where we've been and where we're going in this Pensacola investigation, something very important to my constituents. Here are the two things I said when it happened, Sarah. First, this was an act of terrorism. This was not someone, you know, angry at their teacher. This was not workplace violence. This was not a mental health issue. This was terrorism. And two, the shooter was not the only person involved. This notion that like a guy snapped. Now, why was I able to make that determination? Because when I'm talking to my buddies in local law enforcement and they went around to all these Saudi students afterwards, they hadn't been going to class that day. There was that you just sometimes know when people know that there's something up. And the fact that this shooter hosted like a dinner party the night before his shooting, and that this was his like grand jihad moment, and that he didn't share with the people at the dinner that this was going to be a big event, you know, to conclude his life in this like act of murder and terrorism, you know, I just don't buy it. So there were a few things that didn't make sense. I also had a number of conversations with members of the royal family that, you know, that I have pressed on issues from the 9/11 families to the Khashoggi murder to the way that Saudi Arabia is conducting their war in Yemen. So, I have relationships with the royal family that are based on candor and directness. And I was pretty direct with them that I expected them to clean this up. What we do know is that dozens of Saudi students had to be rounded up and sent back to the kingdom because they were involved in all kind of weird communications, whether it was message boards that had references to radicalization to like just like even the weirdest corners of the internet that, that some of these folks had been to. And I'm glad that they were ejected from our country. But what we now know is that the Pensacola shooter didn't like get radicalized when he was here. This was a plot and a plan that went all the way back to 2015. And so I think we've got to be clear-eyed about our relationship with Saudi Arabia. I think that we need to be ever diligent when we're letting people into our country, particularly around our bravest Americans who are training to go and fight for our country, that we use every filter, every protocol. And then, by the way, when they're here, you know, these aren't Americans. And so I got no problem with the Saudi military students here getting a very aggressive surveillance package on who they're talking to, who they're communicating with. They are foreign military in our country. And, you know, if they are going on match.com, you know, I want to know if they like long walks on the beach or short walks on the beach.
That's right. And it makes you wonder, why didn't we do that before? How come we didn't do that? And we put so many lives at risk. And thankfully, we now have a system in place where we can vet and check. But I don't even know if it's enough, Congressman. I mean, I really don't know if it's enough, because when you look at China, and I'm going to take you right over to China really quick, because I know you have been very outspoken about the use of Chinese drones inside the United States by law enforcement. I feel like we keep making these same mistakes all over again. Here we saw what happened with the Saudi students, and that they were obviously this Saudi pilot was affiliated with Al-Qaeda in Yemen. Now we have Chinese drones being used by our law enforcement, you know, to basically monitor areas of our cities across the United States. And more than that, I talked to Brendan Carr. He's the FCC commissioner. And I want to play you a quick clip from an interview I had with him several weeks ago. And I just want to get your take on this, because I was stunned by it.
Yeah, the surveillance apparatus that the Communist Party has, the technological tools, the back doors that they have access to, is amazing. It is something that we cannot underestimate. And I'll give you an example here. I was in Great Falls, Montana, a couple hundred miles from the border with Canada. Malmstrom Air Force Base is up there, and there's about 150 intercontinental ballistic missiles that are spread in silos over hundreds of miles up there in Big Sky Country. When you drive through there, there is nothing. It is just wheat fields, Big Sky Country, and nobody, except for one thing. There are cell phone towers dotted throughout that missile field that are running Huawei gear. And the capabilities that could take place under potential surveillance activity there are troubling.
Think about that. And you've talked about this, you know, China's operations in the United States being like a Trojan horse. And I couldn't agree more. What do you think about that when you hear that we've got Huawei gear in Montana right mixed in with all of our silos?
I mean, yeah, it's very troubling when you consider that Huawei, ZTE, other companies are working to connect particularly rural America. It's one of the reasons why I've called on more robust guidance from the Department of Justice to local communities, to local law enforcement, to mayors, about the extent to which China leverages dual-use technology. My friend Steve Bannon put it best. China is not our quirky workplace competitor. They are our enemy. They seek to dominate us and replace us as the global superpower. And by the way, not to like extend some like egalitarian, you know, sense of feng shui. They have a view of the role of government that not only doesn't sit with Americans, I mean, doesn't even sit with the people of Hong Kong, if you look at what's going on over there. So I think that we cannot allow a lower level of sophistication at the local level to be a point of vulnerability where the Chinese would attack.
Right. But it's already here. And I think this is why especially with President Trump, for the first time, we have an administration and you, congressmen, members of Congress who are willing to speak out and are not playing this game with China. You know, you're not doing what was happening before under the Bush administration, for example, or even under the Obama administration, where people would just tiptoe around China issues. Right now, you're calling China out. And I want all of our listeners out there to understand how important this is, because it didn't happen before. Before, when we were dealing with this, most people would be afraid to speak out against China. Do you think now we'll be able to gain some kind of control? I mean, are we going to be able to get China out of our communications? I mean, because They've already embedded themselves.
Well, if you zoom out, you can easily see that through the 90s and early 2000s, really both parties offered different interpretations of a pro-China policy. The thought was that greater engagement, cheaper products, better buying power, and that things would be manufactured in China and then services would be provided from the United States. That was very much the melded Clinton, Bush, even Obama approach to China. And President Trump is the first president, certainly in my lifetime, to truly understand and appreciate what China is doing and how these advancements in their technology, how what they're doing in the South China Sea, how they manipulate currency and try to obtain control over critical supply lines really play into this broader strategy. And in this election, I believe there are two questions. One, who can bring America back? And two, which of these two candidates is prepared to confront China? Joe Biden has been a China apologist. He's been simping for China for most of his professional career. And it's my belief that President Trump will have the credibility to explain to the American people that if we really want to ensure America's greatness in the 21st century, that doesn't mean fighting a bunch of, you know, of wars where we're trading villages back and forth in the sands of the Middle East. It doesn't mean chasing, you know, Russia's malign influence around as they fall into a demographic tailspin. It means getting wise to the real fight with China, and it means making sure that America's ready to win it.
Okay, I've got to ask you, what was it like in Camp David?
Camp David was great. You know, there was one moment the president's residence there is being remodeled, so President Trump wasn't staying there. He was elsewhere, and so I got to go and sort of sit on the back deck of the president's residence and look out over the vista that was envisioned and carved out by Truman. To my left was the grill where Eisenhower would go and grill steaks for his staff. And then to the right was the hot tub that had been installed by Bill Clinton. And so really with all of that to do, it was quite a sense of history. Why are you laughing,
okay,
Sarah?
Because all of that beauty. I could imagine that Bill Clinton put in the hot tub. Well, did anybody use the hot tub? Was it an operational order? Did anybody take advantage
Sarah,
of that?
What happens at Camp David stays at Camp David. So I'm not going
to see. I
I'm
was
not
trying
really
to
open the door
I was
into the
trying
hot tub
to,
utilization.
I am telling you, I'm not letting this one go because I mean, if there was a hot tub at Camp David, I think, and it was an operational order, I think somebody used it. I'm just
well,
saying.
If that's your approach, that's the fastest way to get an invite out there, Sarah.
Okay, funny guy. Any big news? Anything we should be watching out for, Congressman?
Yes.
You know, you've
yes.
got a lot going on, so let
yes.
us know.
Yes, a lot of interesting news about Afghanistan, about China policy, and about economic policy that we discussed at Camp David. And if people want to hear all of it, they should listen to Hot Takes with Matt Gaetz tomorrow because I'm going to break it down.
You see podcast. How Matt, you see how Matt does this? You see how he does this? He takes you right to his podcast, which I hope you all listen to because he's phenomenal.
It's my mom's favorite. I've got like 17 comments and I'm pretty sure 15 of them are my mother. So when we get beyond tens of listeners, this is really going to pop.
Well, I'm telling you, you know, I'm going to be all about pushing your podcast, Matt. Congressman Gaetz, thank you so much for being with us today. I know everyone's going to be listening to your podcast. But wait, okay, I know I have one more question because you did bring up Afghanistan, and it is important. It's important to me. I spent a lot of my career in Afghanistan, in Pakistan. I want to hear your thoughts on what's going to happen. I saw President Trump's tweets today on that, and he brought up a really bad.
We had a lot of discussion about Afghanistan out at Camp David. You know, acting DNI Grinnell was there. Mr. O'Brien, the National Security Advisor, was there, and I know that, you know, President Trump, he's just got this amazing capability to do so many things at once, and the guy just never stops working. It was truly impressive to spend the weekend with him and just see how he can go from, you know, the latest nuance in a coronavirus therapeutic to, you know, a major logistical challenge in bringing our troops home and ensuring that we do so in a way that preserves American security to the greatest extent. So yeah, I'm gonna talk all about it, but I can't scoop myself, Sarah. So
no, I'm not gonna. I'm not. I know. Yeah, you gave me enough little scoops. The hot tub was a great one. I mean, it's a hint. It's a hint. It's a trail that I have to follow as an investigative journalist. But thank you for giving that to me. Congressman Gates, thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to listening to your podcast. Again, push it out there.
Thanks so much, Sarah. Hot Takes with Matt Gaetz. And hopefully you'll have me back on the Sarah Carter Show.
I would love to. Thanks so much, Matt. Talk to you soon. Wow, that was just so much fun talking to Congressman Matt Gaetz. But it also was really just gut-wrenching thinking about, you know, the families that lives were affected forever and changed forever with the shooting on the base in Pensacola, Florida. I mean, if you think about this, that Air Force pilot who opened up fire on that naval base, this was not the first time. This was not the first time in this attack. I won't mention his name, the Saudi pilot, because I don't want to give him any credit. But three U.S. soldiers died and eight other Americans were injured. I mean, their families forever affected by this. And it was always difficult to get the FBI to talk about this being an act of terror. It's like everybody walks around on, you know, like I said, pins and needles. Like, we don't want to, you know, mention anything about this being a terrorist attack. We don't want to offend anyone. Could have been a crazy person. Although every bit of evidence points to the fact that he was a terrorist. He infiltrated the system. There were others that were with him, other Saudi students that were there. Pilots, and they were more than likely connected to this. And there were people financing this. Because remember this, Al-Qaeda in Yemen doesn't just exist. It's not like, okay, we're Al-Qaeda in Yemen and we know we're selling trinkets on the streets, right? Just to make money to fund our actions overseas. There are people with lots of money that fund these terror networks. I know because I work in these regions of the world and I deal with agencies that deal with these type of folks and with the military. And we know that. And tracing that money and trying to figure it out. And when you're dealing with Saudi Air Force pilots, by the way, this guy, this plan had been in place since 2015, folks. Since 2015. That's how long Al-Qaeda affiliate in Yemen had been working on this operation. That takes a lot of money. So just want to think about the families out there. Hopefully there will be some sense of justice here. And hopefully this won't happen again. Hopefully this won't happen again to anyone else. I want to go back to something else that Congressman Gaetz and I discussed, which I think is so important for all of us to understand. Do you want to hear how weird this is? I could make a phone call. And this was going back to the interview I did. And you, if you haven't heard it, you absolutely have to hear it at the Sarah Carter Show. It's with Brendan Carr, FCC Commissioner Brendan Carr. This goes back to that interview I had with him where, you know, he's talking about China's infiltration into the United States. Do you realize that if we make a phone call here from Washington, D.C. to California or vice versa, in some instances, our phone calls are rerouted through China. Rerouted through China first. Stored in China. How about that? How about the fact that we've allowed the Chinese Communist Party, because remember, there is no capitalism in China. It's a mirage. It's a facade. It doesn't exist. It's the Chinese Communist Party that owns everything. Even if they've got some billionaires there or some officials that are, you know, sitting as, you know, the CEOs, this is all about the CCP. They control everything. They control everything you do, everything you say, every bit of communication. If you're in China, they know what you're talking about. Believe me, they've got the technology to do it. And that's what Congressman Gaetz was saying. It's like Trojan horse, right? They come in, it looks hip. They've got money. We're going to, you know, Smithfield Farms, we're going to buy this many acres of land and, you know, but we'll own it in America. And then we're going to, you know, put up these telecom communications devices, these 5G towers. Guess where? In rural Montana, right around our silos, our nuclear silos. In rural Montana, for what? And guess what? We got China Telecom, and they're coming in, and they're going to help us. And then there's the whole issue of the drones, right? Chinese-produced drones that probably are sending law enforcement data to China. And this is what Matt Gaetz was, you know, basically screaming about. Congressman Gaetz, hey, DOJ, we need to look at this. We need to stop this. We need to stop this. You know, because this whole issue of us, you know, sleeping at the wheel is not going to last forever, folks. We're going to wake up one day and something really bad is going to happen. I mean, let me read you this really quick. A 2017 report from Los Angeles U.S. and Immigration and Customs Enforcement Office revealed that DGI was targeting law enforcement and critical infrastructure companies to collect and exploit data. With less confidence, it suggested it could be forwarding that data to the Chinese Communist Party. Why do you think several of our agencies have stopped using DGI products? And the National Defense Authorization Act banned the United States military from purchasing those products. Why do you think? Because we have been giving too much away. And this is why President Donald Trump's administration is so important. And I'm going to tell you why. Because for the first time in covering an administration, I remember during the Bush administration when I was working on stories, and then all throughout the Obama administration, nobody would want to hold China accountable. Nobody. They were terrified. They didn't want to talk about it. During editorial board meetings, when I would go to the Pentagon to cover a story, they're like, oh, you're not going to pound on China, are you? I remember poor Bill Gertz. He was like an island unto himself. He's with the Washington Times. You should definitely read all of his work on China. It's so important. He's got a lot of sources inside the U.S. military and Pentagon that deal with this. That's Bill Gertz with the Washington Times. But I remember poor Bill. I would work with him, and it would just be like they wouldn't want to talk to Bill. Because they were so afraid that Bill, and these would be, you know, Pentagon officials and senior officials, they wouldn't want to talk to him about China. They were just like, look, you know, basically saying we're in the pocket of all these companies that have moved all their manufacturing jobs to China, and we don't want to rock anyone's boat. Just let the Chinese do what the Chinese are doing. Eventually, China will change. Eventually, China will be capitalist. No, China created a whole new system. It's so amazing. It's the Chinese Communist Party of capitalism. It's like the Chinese Communist Party is making all the money pretending to be a capitalist. And that's something you need to think about. We do not need a Trojan horse here in the United States. And like I said at the beginning of this podcast, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, get over it. Stop blaming President Trump for everything. Take a step back. Look at what you're doing. Hold China accountable. Make sure you join forces with the Republican Party on this. They are right on the money on this. And again, thank you so much for being with me today. I hope you are happy, healthy, and safe. Remember, we'll be back later this week with big news makers and all the latest here at the Sarah Carter Show. And if you want, and I suggest, you go to our website at sarahacarter.com for the latest stories, and follow me on Twitter at Sarah Carter DC. Again, America, we are taking the story back. God bless.